Save big on your landscaping project now at Menards. Whether you're installing a patio or a new retaining wall, Menards has the blocks you need to get the job done right. We carry the largest in-stock selection ready to take home today. Stop in and get our 12-inch smooth patio block on sale now. Save big on concrete landscape blocks at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
This week on The Breakup Breakdown.
He would come home and talk about his assistant. I remember him telling me, you know, it's really crazy because she and you are a lot alike. And so I remember asking him, is there anything going on between you and, you know, your assistant? No, can't believe you would even ask me that. So his assistant had had a child almost a year earlier to me having a child. And I remember at the time when she had her baby thinking, I wonder if by some chance that could be my ex's baby.
Well, you know, they say there's nothing stronger than a woman's intuition. Welcome to another episode of The Breakup Breakdown. I'm your host and lead relationship PI, Abby Murphy. And this week we've got an episode about a woman who says her ex confessed to an affair, but lied about who it was with. If you're new around here, this is the podcast that gets to the bottom of those messy breakup stories you want to know more about. So if you want to submit a story tip, head on down to the episode description. I keep a submission form link there. Hey, Heartbreakers. Welcome back to another episode of The Breakup Breakdown. This week, we've got an episode from a woman who said that her ex confessed to an affair, but wasn't completely honest about who it was with. But before we get into that, every week we give a shout out to a different domestic violence organization just to raise more awareness. And this week I'm shouting out La Casa de las Madres in San Francisco, California. For more details on this organization, you can find them all down in the episode description. Okay, so this week's submission comes to us from TikTok, where I actually got tagged in somebody's video, which I always love when you guys do that. Thanks for showing me where to find really great stories. But this woman basically has this entire TikTok page completely dedicated to sharing her divorce story and is going on all these wild adventures to Italy and Greece. And I'm like, oh my God, what did this woman go through? That she now has a page where she's sharing her experience, what she's been through, and helping other women get through it. So she had a bunch of videos about her experience, and she was sharing lots of anecdotes from her divorce or her time married to her now ex-husband. But the one that stood out to me before I actually saw the one where she was explaining her full story was one where she mentioned that they had a family trip scheduled and they were getting ready to go out for it the next day. But instead of getting ready to go on the trip, she actually gets blindsided with a divorce. And of course, she goes into more details for that. And then I kept scrolling, and then I saw a couple of anecdotes of her calling an assistant of his to get details on whether or not they were having an affair and finding out that he was having an affair with somebody. And despite the fact that he was having an affair, she decided to write him 100 letters to him. And I'm like, there's so much to this woman's story that I'm like, I need to get her on and find out what went down from start to finish. So let's get the details when we break down this week's breakup.
I remember before I had met my ex that I had just gone through a breakup, and I remember saying my prayers and I was talking to God, and I was like, the next man that I meet, I just want it to be the man that I marry. Like I don't want to keep dating. And so then I met my ex, which actually we had gone to high school together, but we had kind of met each other again after my first year of college. We started talking and he was very persistent. I was like, wow, I've never been pursued like this. This is like, he thinks the world of me. He would send me flowers during finals week. He would come up and visit me in college. I would come down and visit him. We had just the most romantic courting time. You know, and so I'm LDS and he got baptized while we were dating, and I went on a mission, or he went on a mission. I went on a mission. I came home, planned our wedding. 2 weeks after he got back, we got married. And it seemed like when we were on our honeymoon is when things changed. So yeah, but when we were dating, I was like, wow, he would surprise me with gifts. He would surprise me with fun experiences, and he was really good with money. There were just so many traits that I really loved. He was competitive, you know, different things like that. So after we got married on our honeymoon, we were in Hawaii, and, you know, they give you like a room that you can freshen up in after you've been at the beach all day before you go to the airport to head home. So it's not a full room, but it's like a half hotel room that you can, that way you don't have to go on the plane all sandy. So it was the last day of our honeymoon. We were getting ready to go to the airport. We were in this room and I was like, hey, this is not a regular hotel room. Let's get it on. It's kind of fun. It's not really like usual and it might be fun to be a little creative, you know, to be intimate. And he was like, no, I don't really want to. And I was like, is it me? Like, what the heck? I felt, and this was after our full week of being together. And so I was like, and that was kind of the start of things is after that. And that pattern of intimacy kind of followed through the 10-year marriage. But besides that, there were also really great times during the marriage, but they were met with a lot of difficulty in the dynamic as well. After we'd been married about 2 years, 2.5 years, I got pregnant. So his assistant had had a child almost a year earlier to me having a child. And I remember at the time when she had her baby thinking, I wonder if by some chance that could be my ex's baby.
You had that thought?
Yeah, I had the thought when she had the baby.
Why?
I was like, because he would come home and talk about his assistant. And I was like, and another thing, when they first hired her, I remember him telling me, you know, it's really crazy because she and you are a lot alike. Your personalities are a lot alike. I was like, huh. And so I remember asking him, is there anything going on between you and, you know, your assistant? No, no. Can't believe you would even ask me that. Do you know the amount of courage that it took me to build up to have to even ask that question to my husband, to ask him, are you is there something going on between you and your assistant? That's humiliating to have to ask that to your spouse as a wife, as a mother of your children. That is a humiliating question to ask. It took a lot of courage. It's embarrassing as well to not feel validated or reassured by your partner that there's so much insecurity in the relationship that you're like, this, something's missing here. So is there something going on with you? Is that what's going on? Are you fooling around with other people? What's going on? And he, the way he responded, defensiveness. So it wasn't a matter of like reassuring me. It was a matter of being defensive. Like I had the audacity to ask him such things. Well, then I have my third child and he goes completely MIA pretty much during her entire almost first year of life. I'm going from 2 to 3 kids by myself because he's MIA. I had my baby in the spring. That summer, we used to always have a massive 4th of July party. We would invite all of our friends and family. Well, that 4th of July party, he was like, can I invite my assistant and her husband and her son?
Stop.
She was married too. And I'm like, sure, that's fine. His excuse for wanting to invite her to game nights or to whatever was that she didn't have any family here. And she was such an asset to the company that he didn't want her to move. He wanted to give her a sense of community. And so I'm like, okay, we can be a part of that. You know, like we can be a part of that. And I think also, so anyway, I'll get into that later. But so the 4th of July party, he's like, can I invite the assistant? I'm like, sure. So in my family group text, I have a large family. In my family group text, I message all my sisters and their families. And I'm like, hey, you know, this is what the timing is for 4th of July. Come in our house. Let me know what you're going to bring. He shoots into the family message. And he's like, the assistant is going to bring X, Y, and Z. And I'm like, why wouldn't you just tell me that? Like when you get home tonight. Why would you send that to my family group message? He sends the text message. Oh, the assistant is going to bring X, Y, and Z. And I'm like, okay. And everyone ignores it because they're like, no one cares what your assistant's bringing to the 4th of July party. Like a ton of friends are coming to this and not all of them are on this group text. So for you to say that is like freaking weird. Mm-hmm. So my baby is barely over 4 months at this point. And so we host the entire party at my house. She comes with her husband and her child, but I also had no idea that the affair was going on. So then October comes and I remember we were going out to look for couches to buy a couch. We needed a new couch for our house. And during this entire day, we stop by and we have lunch. And I'm like, I think that it would be a good idea if you start sharing your location with me. And he's like, no. I'm like, why not? Because my partner shares his location with his wife and she messages him all the time saying, well, why are you here? What are you doing there? Why are you here? What are you doing there? And I get so many messages throughout the day. I don't want to get those kinds of messages from you.
Wow.
And I was like, well, I think that for safety reasons, we should share each other's location. We went back and forth for hours. He was like, no way in hell am I sharing my location with you. He didn't say that, but essentially that was his attitude. And so I was like, weird. Like, where would you be going that you wouldn't want me to know? Like, you literally go to work and then sometimes you'll go get gas and then you come home. Like, I literally have no idea where you would be going that I would be like, why are you here? Why are you there? Why are you here? Why are you there? I'm like, the only reason a wife would be like, hey, how come you're there? Is because number one, you didn't communicate it to begin with. And number two, why are you not communicating it to begin with? Mm-hmm. If it's an unusual place for you to be, don't you think there should be open communication and transparency when you are in a committed relationship? And this wasn't just a committed relationship. We had businesses, we had children, we had a life, an empire we were building together. So that was in October. We went on a family vacation later that month. And while we went on that family vacation, I was out at the pool with my kids and he went to the room. He was in the room for probably like an hour and a half. I'm like, what the heck? Like, what's he doing in there? Finally, he comes out. I'm like, what's going on? Well, my assistant had to call and she just had a few questions about some paperwork that she was working on. I'm like, that usually never happened during family vacation. And I'm like, okay. So then we get back. The next month is our anniversary. And he's acting extremely distant at this point. He's acting like he wants nothing to do with me. And our baby's about 9 months. And I'm like, our anniversary was coming up. And I was like, hey, do you want me to plan the anniversary? And then I was like, do you feel like I have done something wrong? I feel like this entire year you've been completely distant. And you know what? I just want to know what's going on. No, I'm fine. We'll talk later. And I'm like, well, when we talk, are you going to say you want a divorce? And he was like, no. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, I literally have no idea what's going on. So, you know, I'm just wondering. So the night of his company Christmas party, he came home and he said, you know how you texted me today that you love me? I said, yeah. And he said, well, I love you too, but I'm not in love with you.
Stop.
And I was like, what do you mean you're not in love with me? And he's like, well, I just don't feel in love with you. And he's like, I think I want to get a divorce.
Oh my gosh.
First of all, we're getting ready to go to his company Christmas party. I had already assigned a babysitter. We were probably going to be leaving in like an hour at that point.
Oh my God.
So I go upstairs. I go into like immediate shock. I have a stomach ache. I have a headache. My baby is very young. I have to get her nursed and like ready to leave the house. And I'm like shocked. As we're upstairs, I was like, why are you wanting to get divorced? Like, what does this have to do with anything? Well, you know how the past 5 years I told you that I've been clean from pornography? That's not true.
No.
I was like, geez. And so that's why you want to get divorced? So the company dinner, we go to dinner. As soon as I got to the restaurant, I went to the bathroom and I called my mom. And I called my mom and I said, you know, my husband wants a divorce. What? Why? I don't know. He said that the past 5 years when he told me he hadn't been looking at pornography, he actually had. That's all I really know. So we go to the dinner. I literally could not eat. I could not eat any of my food. I do remember one of the partners was like, oh man, I would love to travel. I would love to travel. And I was like, well, my husband can probably go with you because he'll be available to do that. And he just looked at me like, I can't believe you would say that. And I'm like, as I was crossing the street in the parking lot, there was a car coming towards me. And he was like, you know, hurry, there's a car there. And I was like thinking in my head, I wish that car would just speed up and kill me. It felt so painful. Like I just couldn't believe my entire world was being collapsed right before my eyes. And there was literally nothing I could do about it after the dinner. And when I had gone upstairs, my dad and my mom kind of cornered him and they were like, so who's the other woman? And he was like, there is no other woman. That's not what this is. He was like, I can't believe your parents would confront me like that in my own house. And I'm like, buddy, you deserved so much more than that. And you lied to them. Like mm-hmm. People don't confront you when you act with integrity. People don't confront you asking why you've done what you've done, why you've hurt the people that are supposed to be closest to you. You know, that just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So have some self-awareness. And we started marriage counseling at the beginning of that year. After our first appointment in marriage counseling, I came home and he told me, I've been having an affair with an ex-client. And I was like, whoa. So I was like, what? Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. I started writing him letters, trying to convince him of his goodness and trying to convince him that what we had built was worth fighting for, that it was worth any amount of self-work and self-awareness to do and be the person that you needed to be to continue to support your family. And I just wanted him to really grasp that vision and make a 180 within himself so that we could continue to build what we had built already up to that point. And I wrote him 100+ letters over the course of the next 4 to 5 months, almost daily. I would write these letters and they were filled with hope and compassion and forgiveness. And after I found out about the affair, I was like, I can forgive you. We can make this work. We can make this work. Let's do this. We have built so much up to this point and it will be a lot of work, but it's worth it. Look it, you know, look it, look it. These are things that have no price on them. The value of life and family and children is so precious. How can you throw it away for nothing? And as we continue to go to marriage counseling, I remember meeting with the marriage counselor. This was probably like our third time or something. And I think the marriage counselor was trying to give me perspective as to where my husband was at. And he said, how would you imagine having sex with somebody that repulsed you? I was like,
wait, so your marriage counselor was a man?
Yes, he was a man.
And he's taking your husband's side?
But it was almost like I was the cause of his repulsion. And I was like, he was like, so walk me through the steps on how you would have sex with someone that repulsed you. And I was like, okay, this is freaking weird. Also, he had split us up at this point in the session. So my ex was waiting, or my husband at the time was waiting outside the room. And I was like, well, I guess I would look at our common interests and then I would try to build from there. And he was like, okay. And I just felt like he was essentially saying, number one, your husband is repulsed by you, which was probably true. And number two, how do you expect him to get over that? And I was like, I don't really feel like, I feel like this entire conversation is irrelevant. Who gives a shiz if he's repulsed by me? Why? We are looking for the why. Why is he feeling that way? Why don't we look at that, diagnose that, and start from the ground there? Do you want to make this marriage work? Yeah, I'm willing to give it a shot. I'm willing to try. Okay, so this is how you feel. Why do you think you feel that way? Let's get into the why, and then we can build from there. I should never have even been asked to be put in that position, to put my mind in the perspective of my husband, because I wasn't in charge of changing that perspective. My husband was. He was in charge of the lens in which he saw me and in which he saw the value of our family. That was his job. Never mind. And so for the counselor to have me try to walk in my husband's shoes was irrelevant. I was all in. He was the one who had the disconnects. Well, let's figure out why he has the disconnects, where that started, and work from there. Mm-hmm. Why did we not do that? That did not happen. And we went to marriage counseling for the next 8 months. And I felt like during that time, I was made to seem, it felt like, honestly, that the marriage counselor was so worried about my husband disengaging from counseling that he had to be 100% on his side. But I felt like that didn't give an accurate depiction of what we were going through in our marriage, because I felt that he was constantly validating his thoughts and feelings, but in constantly validating those things, he wasn't being completely truthful and honest with my husband as far as where my husband was and where or how he needed to get to where he needed to be.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
So I'm assuming through all of that, you never get the why of why he's repulsed or why he doesn't feel like he can make things work.
I didn't get it from my husband. I do remember talking to my marriage counselor one time on the phone when I had taken my kids out of town. And my marriage counselor was like, I will say that he has an attachment disorder. I had no idea what the freak that meant. All I thought that meant was that he has a hard time attaching to intimate relationships, which was true, but I didn't understand that there's a whole series of attachment styles. Now, since I've gone through the divorce and I've been able to look back at the relationship and see it with a clearer lens, I have learned a lot more about what attachment styles are and how they affect the way that we interact with those that are closest to us. And that has given me great insight, not only to my ex-husband, but also to myself, because you want to have a secure attachment style. That's the goal for everybody. So finally, in the middle of the summer, I had come to the point where I was like, you know what? If he wants to leave, let him leave, because I want him here. If he's going to choose to, he has to choose to want to be here. I don't want him here because I want him here. I don't want him to stay because I want him here. So we went to our last marriage counseling appointment. I said, you know, if you're sticking around because you think I want you here, I don't want you to do that. I want you to stick around because you want to be here. And if you don't want to be here, then leave. But I'm ready to move on and I'm ready to move forward. And he was like, well, I'm 99% out. I said, okay, so you want to hire an attorney or you want to hire attorneys? No. I think that we should go through the divorce process. Just you and I, we do it ourselves. It's going to cost a lot of money if we hire attorneys. And I was like, Well, I've been underrepresented in my relationship with you our entire marriage. There is no way I'm not hiring an attorney. And so that night, we drove to a parking lot and we sat in the parking lot. And I was like, we made promises to each other for eternity. And I really was willing to forgive you all the way. Yeah, I remember too. We got in the car after marriage counseling and he said, if we get divorced, would you still wait for me? Meaning, if he didn't find happiness after our divorce, could he come back to me? And I was like, no, this is me waiting for you. This right now, while we're married and we're going through this is me waiting for you. And he was like, okay. And at least I had the self-respect to say that. I can't be mad at myself for trying so hard to keep it together. I honor that, Jamie. I honor her. I also honor this Jamie, who's moving forward and continuing to heal and learning, because I'm grateful for the opportunity to learn what I experienced in my marriage rather than to gloss it over with rainbow butterfly glasses, because that wasn't the reality. And I didn't really need to see things for what they were. And after filing for the divorce, it gave me the opportunity to do that. So after he told me he wanted the divorce that night, I met with an attorney the next day. Sorry, let me back up. That night, when we were in the parking lot, he told me that his partners had found out about the affair almost a year prior and that they had approached him and they said, it's a risk to the company that you've done this. And so we need to buy you out as partner, but we're going to keep you on as an employee. So I'm like, so you sold our share of the company without telling me? Yeah. Well, why did you wait till tonight to tell me? Because I wanted to see what would happen with us first.
Oh my God.
Well, what would that change? I don't understand what that would change. So were you ever going to tell me? Yeah, I probably would have told you. So who else knows? Just the partners. Did you tell your parents? No. Does anyone at the company know? No. So I talked to my attorney the next day and I told him that. And he said, well, we'll have to verify that the sale of your guys' shares in the company as partners was legit and that it wasn't just to make sure that he didn't have to pay you your share of the company if you got divorced. Okay. So we did go through the proper channels during the divorce, and we did have to depose all the partners and their wives and people from the company. In those depositions, during the depositions, that time is when I found out that he was actually having an affair with an assistant, not this ex-client. And that was shocking because during the time that we were trying to make things work after I'd found out about the affair, I remember going to grocery stores thinking, what if I run into this ex-client that I've never met before and I see her around town and I have my kids with me? What is that going to be like for me? I would get anxiety going to the stores, being like, what if I run into this woman? Am I going to approach her? What would I say? It was a different level of humiliation to have to deal with those thoughts and feelings every single time I would go out and buy groceries for our family. Then during the depositions, I found out, oh no, wait, it was with the assistant who has been to my home, who knew me, who was swimming in our pool with her son and her husband. So it wasn't like I had to process one singular affair with all the knowledge, and it wasn't even like I was making my decision to forgive and to stay with the truth. I was making my decisions to forgive and to stay and to make things work off of false pretenses, false knowledge, because he wasn't honest with me. And so I also have to have grace with myself with that too, because every choice I was making up to that point was not based off of facts, but I didn't know that until, you know, during the time of the depositions. At least it took me less time, I feel like, to process. Like a lot of things added up after I found out about who the real affair partner was, even though I think there was more than one. That main affair, I think that he fell in love with her and was like, I can't have this with anyone else. It'll never happen. So I'm leaving everything. Anyway, he also sent me a text in the middle of the divorce being like, well, it's not our character to do what we did. It was just because there was such a strong emotional bond. It doesn't speak to who we are. It just happened because there was such an emotional bond between us. And I'm like, you're making it sound like it happened one time. Mm-hmm. That you didn't hide hotel rooms and hide dinner bills from me. You're literally making it sound like it happened one time and then I confessed. No, 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 sir. This was intentional. There was so much deception, so many lies that went into this. You cannot say that this was one time thing or that this was out of character. This was planned. This was methodically thought out. And you loved the game. Mm-hmm. Don't pretend like you didn't love it. Then the depositions, I find out who the affair was with. And we continue going through the divorce process. The custody did end up being 60-40, which was good. And I felt like so much clarity came to me through the divorce process. And I feel like I really didn't start like deciphering things and letting go of the guilt and the shame and the embarrassment until about 6 months. It took me about 6 months from when we filed till I started to release a lot of the embarrassment and shame that I felt from my husband cheating, lying about who he had cheated with, the pornography. Now we're getting divorced. What all of that looked like. Felt responsible for a lot of it. And honestly, none of those things were my choices. Even the divorce, like I was willing to stay with him for forever. But one of the greatest gifts I feel like that he gave me was, besides my children, was walking away. Because that did allow me to be able to look back on our relationship and see it for what it really was. And in seeing that, I've been able to reclaim some of my favorite parts of myself that were lost. And I am so grateful for that opportunity. Really, I am. I feel like that was a gift from God for sure.
I'm devastated for you because it sounds like you really went into this with the best intentions, thinking that this was your forever. I know, especially in the LDS church, like marriage, you're literally sealed for forever in that practice. So I'm sure that was really difficult to get over. I'm wondering, why do you think he married you if so quickly off the bat, he seemed to just be mentally checked out?
I think that a lot of it had to do with his own self-image and wanting to portray a certain self to others versus being honest with himself as far as who he really was. Our relationship was built on a layer of lies, levels of lies, I guess. And but I didn't really know that because I only knew what he was willing to share with me. And so I think that there was a part of him who wanted to be a certain person or at least wanted to present himself as this certain person. And then there was another part of him that was pretty set in his ways.
I'm just so sad for you. Because I know you breaking up with family is devastating. And I'm sure that's been a difficult road to navigate. What has co-parenting been like for you? And how have you done that in a way that's productive for your family?
When we were going through the divorce, I remember one Thanksgiving morning, I called for my kids to come up to my room. And I was like, let's sit down. Let's each go around and say things that we're grateful for. And so I started with my oldest. He listed out things he was grateful for. My second oldest, he listed out things that he was grateful for. My youngest was napping. So then it got to my turn. I'm like, number one, I'm grateful for you guys. I'm grateful for our home. I'm grateful for God. I'm grateful for all these wonderful things. And my oldest is like, well, are you grateful for Dad? And I was like, who kind of ignored him? And I just kept listing all the things I was grateful for. He interrupted me two more times asking if I was grateful for Dad. And I was like, how can I answer him honestly? Because I don't want to lie to my kids. And also I don't want to hurt my kids. So I was like, please help me, Heavenly Father. And so I was like, yes, I am grateful for your dad because without him, I would not have you guys. And I was able to say that. And his immediate response was, well, I asked Dad that same question and he said he wasn't grateful for you. And so I was like, that's okay. I don't need Dad to be grateful for me to love you guys. And that doesn't change my love for you. It also doesn't change that I am grateful for him. That doesn't change anything. And so that's okay. And I think that that helped my son separate. I don't know. I think it helped my son ground himself in the fact that however his dad acts or responds is never going to change my love for my children. Mm-hmm. And I really did want to make that clear. The reason why I share that story is because I feel like that plays into how I've tried to co-parent. I feel like since being divorced, I have had to learn to set firm boundaries because I feel that I, during my entire marriage, would accommodate someone else to avoid contention or accommodate someone else's preferences above my own to keep them comfortable. And what I've learned is that that's not my job. Mm-hmm. It's not my job to keep other people comfortable. It's my job to make sure my needs are being met. And it's my job to make sure that my children have a good example of someone who's willing to stand up not only for themselves, but for what's right. And so I wouldn't say that my co-parenting relationship is easy. I think that it's actually difficult because I'm constantly trying to balance my natural instinct of avoid contention with doing what I think is best, no matter the cost. And if that means a little discomfort to begin with, but peace within myself in the long run, then I need to do it. And it's kind of like constant little battles. And so it's hard.
Can I ask you a kind of taboo question about your kids?
Yes.
I've always thought this about people who go through really difficult divorces where you're clearly experiencing really traumatic things from the person that you married and the person that you had kids with. Do you have a hard time? I'm trying to phrase this correctly. You love your kids so much, but they're also half of somebody who also really hurt you. Do you have any feelings about that?
It's kind of funny because I feel like, oh, well, without him, you wouldn't have had your kids. And I'm like, well, with somebody else, I would have had different kids. So I still would have had kids, potentially. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That's kind of where you're coming from, right? It's like,
yeah, well, I guess, you know, I wonder if they do things that remind me of your, or remind you of your ex-husband, or if you're sometimes...
That doesn't really necessarily bother me. I feel like my children are the best versions of both of us. And that's something that I really can respect because in those letters that I talked about that I wrote to my ex during my marriage, I mean, I was attracted to him and we had a lot of similarities. And in those letters, I wrote all the good things that I saw in him. In doing so, I think that that healed that part of me that might have existed had I not done that, because all of those good qualities are in my children. And I'm grateful for that. And so I don't really feel like it's a horrible reminder of him by any means. I wish that he could see how great they were and do the inner work that he needed to do to become his best self. For himself, not even for me. Even if he did the inner work at this point, I'd never go back. But I think that for himself and for his kids, it would be great for him to do that. And I think that a lot of times people are like, oh, would you die for your kids? Or would you do this for your kids? Or would you do that for your family or this or that? And it's like, well, I think that for it to be genuine, you have to first do it for you. And I think that for you to do good things for yourself, you have to know how to have love for yourself. You have to love the version of you that you are. And in loving the version that you are, you have to accept your faults and be willing to work on them. There's a lot of humility in that. You know, you have to be able to look at yourself and be like, these are the things I love about myself. These are the things I could improve on, and be intentional on your thoughts and your improvement in what you consume. And I'm not just saying what you eat, but what you consume in media, what you consume during your free time. Are you working on self-improvement? And I don't even think that it's necessarily just like self-improvement books. I'm very spiritual. And what I mean by that is I think that self-improvement starts when you extend yourself spiritually to God. And when you extend yourself spiritually to God, you start to understand how almighty and all-knowing He is, which makes us as mortals very, very small and our knowledge very, very small. When you realize that and you're willing to let Him into your life to teach you, I think that He compensates for our mortal weakness. He has given us agency, the ability to choose for ourselves. He wants us to choose freely for ourselves the kind of people that we want to be.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being so vulnerable and sharing, I mean, just so much of your story and what it's taught you. And I know there's a lot of women listening who are probably experiencing a really similar situation to what you went through in your marriage and your divorce. So if you could just give them any advice or encouragement, like what's something you would want to tell them right now?
Okay, so that is literally the exact reason why I started my Living Over the Top social media account, is because I wanted other women to know that I do not feel like I was perfect during the process, but in the middle of the process, I felt there were so many times that I felt completely paralyzed because your world is crumbling before you and there's nothing that you can do about it. It feels like you're spiraling out of control and you do not know what's ahead of you. So to move forward is so scary. And I just wanted to encourage women that the process is messy, but you're not alone and it does get better. And so if I were to tell women that any women that have been or are going through what I have gone through, to stay faithful, utilize prayer, count your blessings daily, and surround yourself with people that you really do love and that love you in return. Because I feel like my community of family and friends are really what helped buoy me up. And I think that counting my blessings each night, I started a gratitude text group, or I didn't start it, but my friend did. During my divorce, her and I would text each other three things we were grateful for every night. And that really helped me shift that life was worth living. There are good things going on. Even though I don't know the ins and outs of everything right now, I trust that there is a loving God who has a plan for me and that it will get better and improve. And I feel like I'm living that right now, that so much of my life has improved. I have found so many things that I thought were lost forever about myself that I love and cherish. And I would have never been granted that opportunity had I given up. And I think that putting one foot in front of the other and keep going, that it does eventually get better.
You know, I've been searching for new topics for bonus episodes because in the 4.5 years of doing this, I'm like, we've covered everything. We've literally covered everything. But this time around, I want to talk about co-parenting and how to do it in a healthy way. So on Thursday, I will have an expert on to share how to do it effectively. I'll see you whenever you decide to tune in next.